Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. As crowds in the Democratic Republic of the Congo thronged on Thursday to hear Pope Francis's message of hope and solidarity on day three of his official visit to Central Africa, UN aid teams warned that they face growing demands and shrinking funds in DRC, which is Africa's biggest hunger crisis. Millions of Congolese people face severe food insecurity, particularly in the northeast, where fighting has uprooted millions, the UN World Food Programme, WFP, said. To help them, the UN agency has appealed to the international community for more than $627 million for this year's operations. In a personal appeal of his own, Pope Francis reportedly urged young Congolese to work for a better future and shun corruption. You are part of a greater history, one that calls you to take an active role as a builder of communion, a champion of fraternity, an indomitable dreamer of a more united world, he said, as he also urged all those at the 80,000 capacity Martyrs Stadium in Kinshasa to never succumb to the persuasive but poisonous temptations of corruption. To Geneva, where the UN's top disarmament official has urged countries to continue pushing to prevent an arms race in space. Izumi Nakamitsu, United Nations High Representative for Disarmament Affairs, told the Working Group on Space Threat Reduction that rules were needed so that outer space is not monopolized by any one state. That risk is globally understood, which is why countries from all regions of the world began talking about drawing up norms, rules and principles of responsible behaviours on space last May at the request of the UN General Assembly back in 2020. Amid concerns that a handful of countries have begun testing weapons capable of targeting satellites and that a lack of regulations exist for privately funded space activities, the UN disarmament chief insisted that outer space must be explored and utilized for peaceful purposes and in the interest of maintaining international peace and security and for the benefit of all states. The third meeting of the open-ended working group on reducing space threats continues all week in Geneva. After violence escalated in South Sudan's Jonglei and Pibor areas, UN humanitarians have stepped up support to people displaced by the emergency, they said on Thursday. UNHCR, the UN refugee agency, tweeted that it had distributed relief items in Pibor town to more than 5,000 people who had to flee their homes, including blankets, plastic sheets and buckets. Thousands more have already received humanitarian supplies after being displaced by the violence, which included cattle raiding and the destruction of homes. In an initial alert about the emergency last month, UN Aid Coordination Office OCHA stressed the importance of protecting civilians and civilian assets and of having safe and unhindered access to people in need. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
That's right. We're finally back on live. We did it an hour early because we've got a busy schedule today. So we've got lots of things to do, lots of things to air and broadcast. In addition, we've got a special short from the Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate. Really happy to put them on whenever I can get the time to do it. We'll have Free Thought Friday coming up here. After Democracy Now!, the short bit from the Gray Zone.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As Pope Francis visits South Sudan today, 27 people, including five children, were killed in clashes between cattle herders and militia members Thursday. The Vatican said the Pope's visit came in the hopes of reinvigorating a troubled peace process following a decade of conflict in South Sudan since its establishment in 2011. The Pope's visit comes after he spent the week in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where more than a million worshipers attended his mass in Kinshasa. He condemned the simultaneous exploitation and neglect of the region by Western powers.
The poison of greed has smeared its diamonds with blood.
This is a tragedy to which the economically more advanced world often closes its eyes, ears, and mouth. Yet this country and this continent deserve to be respected and listened to. They deserve to find space and receive attention. Hands off the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Hands off Africa. Stop choking Africa. It is not a mine to be stripped or a terrain to be plundered.
On Thursday, protesters gathered outside Kinshasa's Notre Dame Cathedral to denounce systemic sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. Advocates are drawing attention to the case of a 14-year-old girl who was raped by a priest in the DRC and demanding the church apply a 2019 law enacted by the Pope to hold bishops accountable for sex abuse or for covering it up. This is Tim Law, founder of Ending Clergy Abuse.
What happened after the abuse was reported to the bishop, the good sisters and priests that reported it all got fired and the order disbanded, and the girl has left the country in fear of her life. If the Pope doesn't enforce this law, he's sending a message throughout all of Africa, bishops, it doesn't matter, do what you want. If he enforces this law, he sends a message that he cares about the African children.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has welcomed the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen to Kyiv for talks on Ukraine's push to join the European Union. EU officials have said Ukraine's accession to the 27-member bloc will, at a minimum, take several more years as Ukraine needs to ensure more anti-corruption measures. At Thursday's summit, von der Leyen also said the Commission will set up a dedicated office at The Hague to prosecute war crimes committed by Russia during its war in Ukraine. Her remarks came as Russian President Vladimir Putin compared Russia's invasion of Ukraine to the Battle of Stalingrad in World War II. Putin spoke at a ceremony in Volgograd commemorating the 80th anniversary of the Red Army's victory over Nazi forces.
Now, unfortunately, we see that the ideology of Nazism, in its modern form and manifestation, once again directly threatens the security of our country. Again and again, we have to repel the aggression of the collective West.
It is believed possibly more than 200,000 Russian soldiers have died in Ukraine. On Capitol Hill, House Republicans have removed Minnesota Democratic Congressmember Ilhan Omar from the Foreign Affairs Committee after accusing her of anti-Semitism. Omar has been outspoken in her support of Palestinian rights, has been repeatedly accused by Republicans and some Democratic leaders for questioning U.S.-Israeli relations and criticizing the power of AIPAC and the Israeli lobby in Washington. Congressmember Omar spoke from the House floor after 218 Republicans voted to strip her committee assignments in Thursday's party line vote.
Come to Congress to be silent. I came to Congress to be their voice. And my leadership and voice will not be diminished if I am not on this committee for one term. My voice will get louder and stronger, and my leadership will be celebrated around the world as it has been.
Congressmember Omar came to the United States as a refugee after her family fled civil war in Somalia. She's one of the first Muslim women to serve in the House. Democrats accused Republicans of political retribution over the removal of far-right Congressmembers Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar from their committee assignments in the last Congress due to their violent, racist rhetoric. In 2021, Congressmember Gosar became the first lawmaker to be censured in more than a decade for posting an animated video on social media where he murders Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and attacks President Biden. This is Congressmember Ocasio-Cortez speaking from the House floor Thursday.
I had a member of the Republican caucus threaten my life, and you all and the Republican caucus rewarded him with one of the most prestigious committee assignments in this Congress. Don't tell me this is about consistency. Don't tell me that this is about a condemnation of anti-Semitic remarks when you have a member of the Republican caucus who has talked about Jewish space lasers and an entire amount of tropes and also elevated her to some of the highest committee assignments in this body. This is about targeting women of color in the United States of America. Don't tell me, because I didn't get a single apology when my life was threatened. Thank you.
Meanwhile, the House approved a bipartisan resolution Thursday to, quote, denounce the horrors of socialism. The non-binding measure passed with the support of every Republican. 109 Democrats voted yes, 86 voted no, 14 voted present. Wisconsin Democrat Mark Pocan, who voted no, said, quote, this resolution is plain ridiculous. It jointly condemns Pol Pot and Norway, he said. He accused Republicans of staging the vote to pressure Democrats to accept cuts to Social Security and Medicare. In immigration news, nearly 1,000 asylum-seeking families remain separated after their children were forcibly taken at the U.S.-Mexico border under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy. That's according to the Homeland Security Department, which reported on Thursday that a task force created by the Biden administration has only been able to reunite some 689 children with their parents and relatives. An estimated 5,500 migrant children were separated from their families during Trump's time in office. Thousands have since been found and reunited with loved ones, largely due to the work of advocacy groups like the ACLU. President Biden had vowed to stop the practice and to pay reparations to the families separated by Trump, but his administration has now refused to pay restitution, while data shows Biden immigration officials have separated hundreds of families at the southern border. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus met with President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris at the White House Thursday, a day after the funeral of Tyre Nichols. This is Nevada Democrat Stephen Horsford, chair of the Congressional Black Caucus.
The death of Tyre Nichols is yet another example of why we do need action, but you've already led on the action that we've been able to take through executive order. We need your help to make sure we can get the legislative actions that are necessary to save lives and to make public safety the priority that it needs to be for all communities.
In New Jersey, a 30-year-old councilwoman was shot dead in her car outside her home Wednesday in the town of Sayreville, New Jersey. Eunice Dwumfor was elected in 2021, was remembered by a colleague as someone who, quote, wanted to make a better community for all our children, unquote. The identity of the killer, their motive unknown. She leaves behind a young daughter and her husband. A federal court has struck down a ban on gun ownership for some perpetrators of domestic violence. The ruling by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals relies on an antiquated interpretation of gun laws and comes as the U.S. is seeing a surge of gun violence. The Gun Violence Archive says there were 52 mass shootings last month, making it the deadliest January since it started tracking such data. A 2021 study found over two-thirds of mass shootings are either domestic violence incidents or perpetrated by shooters with a history of domestic violence. The Justice Department said it plans to appeal Thursday's ruling. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, at least two Republican lawmakers, including embattled New York Congressmember George Santos, have been spotted wearing AR-15 pins on their lapels. The Office of Florida Congressperson Ana Paulina Luna said the shocking accessory is meant to promote a gun bill, though it's unclear what that bill is. And the Biden administration's released Guantanamo Bay detainee Majid Khan after nearly 20 years in custody. In 2021, Khan became the first Guantanamo prisoner to testify in an open court about torture methods used by the CIA at its network of secret black sites, where Khan was detained from 2003 to 2006. This is Bahar Azmi, legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, speaking to Democracy Now! Then.
Majid Khan, to his credit, detailed the systematic, brutal, sadistic torture of U.S. government officials, namely the CIA, which for nearly 20 years the U.S. government has tried to keep secret.
Khan's lawyer said in a statement, Guantanamo's a national shame. We hope that today is another step forward towards its ultimate closure. The men languishing in Guantanamo who've been cleared for release must be transferred. Indefinite detention is anathema to a just society, they said. Majid Khan arrived in Belize on Thursday, which has agreed to permanently resettle him. His release came as the United Nations announced it's sending a human rights official to the Guantanamo military prison for the first time ever. The U.S. continues to hold 34 men at Guantanamo. Only 11 of them have been charged in military tribunals. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, College Board has removed Black Lives Matter, slavery reparations, and queer theory as required topics in the curriculum for its AP African American Studies course. We'll speak to two professors on the so-called cancel list, whose work has been removed from the new required curriculum. Stay with us.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We've taken down the National Prayer Breakfast, as Congress knew it.
We'll talk about that. Plus, we'll hear Nebraska State Senator and atheist Megan Hunt
tell us how she is fighting to keep religion out of state government.
Yeah, that's coming up here. And here's a short from the Gray Zone that came out recently, and it's, let's see here.
Let me ask you about what just happened to you and other voices in London, where there was supposed to be this event, right, to talk about the proxy war in Ukraine, and now twice the organizers – or the hosts have been intimidated into canceling?
Yeah, well, here's a report from Morningstar UK, which is one of the few good anti-war papers left in the world. Freedom of speech fears as Conway Hall cancels No to NATO event after intimidation. Speakers due to address a No to NATO, No to War rally on February 25th in London have warned that freedom of speech is under threat after the iconic Conway Hall venue was pressed into canceling the booking. The event, which was to be addressed by members of European Parliament, Claire Daly and Mick Wallace, former members of British Parliament, Chris Williamson and George Galloway, and a range of journalists and campaigners, including me, is now seeking a replacement venue. So Conway Hall, which is as this article indicates, an iconic venue, which has a long history of hosting anti-war events, is where actually Jeremy Corbyn's parents met at one such event, said that they had to cancel the event because of a, quote, unprecedented backlash against it and an onslaught of increasingly intimidating emails and social media posts. Regretfully, we have taken the decision that Conway Hall can no longer host your event as we are now unable to ensure the safety of our building and our staff on and offline. The online detractors were actively seeking to contact our funders, partners, and hirers. So we were cowards and we bowed out because we're afraid. And safety is just such a meaningless word at this point. A lot of people feel unsafe because of the violence of words or the violence of tweets or the violence of emails. But they're not willing to actually stand up for a cause that Conway Hall traditionally represented, which is to take on the war state and to take on the regime. And you know what's so funny about this is that so many of the people who have been attacking Conway Hall are the kind of people that would denounce Russia or any other official enemy as autocratic, authoritarian, or undemocratic, and point to the lack of institutions that are willing to or able to stand up against the so-called regime. And then here you have in the supposedly democratic liberal West, one institution after another caving under online pressure before the regime. There is no institution, no major institution I can think of in this society in the United States, in the UK, or in the collective West, which is willing to stand up to the regime and play host to an event like this with credible and important anti-war voices taking on NATO and a war that is escalating to the point where we are now considering the possibility of nuclear retaliation or a nuclear exchange. So this perfectly lifts a mask on the fraud of democracy in the West. And it plays into exactly what I was saying before about how democracy is managed in the West. We need to maintain this democratic veneer. We can't just openly come out and be a one-party state. But if you actually challenge the regime, you will face such an onslaught that you will never be heard from, and you'll basically have to retire to a small corner of the internet to do what we're doing right now. And I've experienced this so many times in the past few years when I've tried to speak about my work and the work that we're doing at the Gray Zone.
And then the problem for us is because we have limited time and resources, now we have to devote time and energy to making the case for why we should speak and refuting all the dumb lies that are put out there to try to justify censoring us, rather than just having a debate, an intellectually honest discussion of whatever issues we want to discuss, whether it's Ukraine proxy war or Syria or anything else we cover. This is how they operate. They tie us up with fights over the right to air our reporting. And that changes the focus from the reporting itself. And this just goes on.
And just one quick final point, and I'll show the list of speakers. David Miller, if you see him close to the bottom, we've had him on before. He's been drummed out of his university under attack by neoconservative and pro-war elements. So many of these figures have come under enormous attack. But one common thread is that so many of them were on Paul Mason's mind map of the Russia-China influence operation in London that he was creating for Andy Price, his apparent handler in the British security state, who works in the Foreign Office and deals with what he calls disinformation, which is actually just official censorship. So these figures have all been targeted officially. And the way this played out was through proxy, through NAFO, the North Atlantic Fellows Organization, this troll farm that Alex Rubenstein has covered for us, took credit for it. But they're just basically acting on behalf of the state, but doing so kind of organically. And it's depressing. As I said, I've experienced this for years. My event here at the main political bookstore in DC, Politics and Prose, was suspended indefinitely under pressure from the same kind of elements because of the book, what the book was saying about Duma and the dirty war in Syria. And it was an organized campaign. And then our event, Aaron, in Portugal at the Web Summit, same exact elements running through Bellingcat, the Atlantic Council, and including the wife of Vladimir Zelensky, Olena Zelenska. So that's what we're up against, but the event will go on. It will go on somewhere, and I'll be there. I'll be participating one way or another on February 25th. And yeah, we need this kind of activity right now. We need a broad tent of anti-war activism, because this proxy war is entering an extremely dangerous new phase where the level of American involvement is so extreme that I don't even know if we can even continue to call it a proxy war, Aaron.
It's something to think about. One of the oldest labor halls, Conway Theater in England, canceled the anti-war summit of George Galloway, who, by the way, is one of the bigger anti-war voices, was going to be speaking there at that hall. So it really is a serious challenge. And you heard the voices of Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté of the Gray Zone, one of the few outlets that is consistently exposing the hypocrisy of the imperialist regime wherever it's at, in all of its forms. So imperialist war seems to be coming on the agenda again, and oppression of those anti-war forces is all-powerful right now. So you'll hear more from us at Radio Free Kansas about this subject, and we're going to start carrying the Gray Zone more often, hopefully every day. You can catch the Gray Zone at online at WBAI Radio New York City. That's the same radio station that carries Law and Disorder. So we'll get back here. We're going back on Free Thought Friday, and we'll have in the second hour a special
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I can testify that I did not pray today with my breakfast, but a whole bunch of federally elected officials did. More about that later.
And I'm Dan Barker. I didn't pray either, but I did curse the cold this morning. Does that count as a prayer? I
guess no.
No. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is the February 2nd, 2023 edition of Free Thought Radio. Again, Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arts is our engineer in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, the national offices of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which works to keep religion out of government and social policy and represents the views of those of us, the almost 30% of Americans who identify as unaffiliated, atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular. And we have a very important milestone this week that we just passed at FFRF. We are more than 40,100 strong. So we want to welcome our new members. A lot of you joined us after seeing the Ron Reagan commercial on 60 Minutes. We're also airing that commercial on the Rachel Maddow Show on Mondays this month, and look for it on Stephen Colbert Live during his coverage of the State of the Union address on Tuesday, and a couple other times on the Colbert Show in the next couple weeks.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to hear Nebraska Senator Megan Hunt, who is an open atheist, tell us how she is working to keep religion and government separate.
And before that, FFRF attorney Sam Grover is going to tell us about our newest court victory. Finally, after almost 8 years of legal wrangling, we have won over the governor of Texas who violated our free speech rights.
Today's the anniversary of the birth of the songwriter Burton Lane. He was born February 2nd, 1912. His widow told us on this show a few years ago that Burton Lane was not religious. Listen for some of Lane's music today during the breaks, including Old Devil Moon, On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, How Are Things in Glaucomora, and Finian's Rainbow.
This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist program, FFRF attorneys Liz Cavell and Chris Line spoke with Joseph Richardson. He's one of our members and a director of the Central Florida Free Thought Community, which is an FFRF chapter in Central Florida. And he talked about how his secular invocation before the Lake County Board of Commissioners was immediately corrected with a prayer.
During the show, Joseph Richardson described how the county is refusing to formally apologize or to make sure that the divisive mistake will not happen again. Let's listen to part of the testimony that Joseph Richardson gave before the county board about their actions.
Today I'm respectfully asking this body, not just Commissioner Parks, for those three specific things. An acknowledgement that a mistake was made, the apology that Commissioner Parks' spokesperson said would happen, and a commitment from this board that it will not happen again. If it is true that your intent is to be inclusive, if it's true that the intent was not to demean my message, if it's true that it saddens you to know that I felt mistreated by the offering of a second invocation, then I hope that you will be eager to acknowledge the mistake, to apologize, and to make sure that it is not repeated. It would show respect not just to me or to our organization or to atheists generally, but to every citizen of Lake County, regardless of their religious beliefs.
You can watch that Ask an Atheist show right now on FFRF's YouTube channel by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And a new episode of Ask an Atheist airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the live show. You can find it on Facebook at facebook.com/4FFRF. That's the number 4FFRF.
If they don't quite understand that URL, but...
Well, I guess you're for the group.
I see. On our TV show, Faith That Matters, I spoke with Iranian-born activist Miriam Namazi. We've had her on this show before. She's an international reformer, atheist, feminist, and secularist, and we talked about what is happening in Iran today, the brave resistance to the patriarchy.
And the show began with a clip of Miriam protesting in the street.
This is the end of the Islamic regime of Iran. This women's revolution is going to bring the Islamic regime of Iran to its knees. And it will liberate not just Iran, not just Afghanistan and the Middle East, not just Iraq, but the entire world. This women's revolution is your revolution.
So you can watch that exciting episode of Faith That Matters right now. Just went up today on our playlist on our YouTube channel for Faith That Matters.
And if you live in one of the 13 major cities where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local TV, you can watch it every Sunday morning. For stations and times, check our website, ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters, or go to the news drop-down on our homepage and look for it there.
So there's a whole lot of news to get through, and I'm going to start with talking about how FFRF and a coalition of groups and journalists took down the National Prayer Breakfast as Congress knew it. And that's always the first Thursday in February. And it was started 70 years ago by this shadowy theocratic group known as the Family, or also the Fellowship, or they call themselves the International Foundation, but don't try to find it online. Very secretive. And they've been exposed for years by journalists such as Jeff Charlotte, who wrote a whole book called The Family, by Jonathan Larson from The Young Turks. They had a scandal 4 years ago involving Maria Butina, a Russian spy, influence peddling. It's a bunch of theocrats. They're Christian nationalists, but they also have global aspirations. And they would crook their finger and make Congress, members of Congress and the president and members of the cabinets, show up at this annual event that had this vaunted, we're all kumbaya, praying for peace. And then it would be invaded sometimes by tens of thousands, well, up to 3,000 people, many of them not Americans, including despots like Papa Doc and so on over the past, where they would mingle. They would have a chance to mingle with the president in person and members of Congress, and then it would end up in like 4 days of closed-door lobbying and politics that would be disagreeable to many members of Congress. They're being used by the fellowship. So we led a coalition letter, FFRF led a coalition letter more than a week ago, signed by 40 groups, including some religious groups. Already there were people distancing themselves, like Pelosi last year did not attend, although Biden did. And it was becoming a political hot potato for members of Congress to show up. So the family went into a mode of trying to make it still happen, but backing off a little bit. And so early this week, former Senator Mark Pryor, a very religious guy associated with the fellowship, announced that the fellowship itself would no longer sponsor the prayer breakfast, but a group called the National Prayer Breakfast Foundation. However, it turns out that everybody on the board of the National Prayer Breakfast Foundation is an acolyte of the fellowship. And so they're still kind of the puppeteer managing the strings. And so they had this prayer breakfast today, but it was now in the Capitol Center, only members of Congress, their spouses, the president. And then this big bash they have always at the Washington Hilton is still taking place. They're calling it the gathering. They still have over 1,300 people coming,
But it won't be as easy for them to lobby members of Congress. Members of Congress are going to have to go to them. So although we feel there's still subterfuge involved, FFRF is definitely celebrating that the secular movement and this wonderful reportage has really forced a huge change for the National Day of Prayer, and we're sure the fellowship is unhappy about it.
President Biden did attend this year. He most probably did pray privately, but during his public remarks, he did not lead a prayer.
And this was at the Visitor Center. He didn't attend the gathering.
That's right. But when he did speak, he did refer to Christian scripture.
We know that faith and history teach us, however dark the night, joy cometh in the morning. And that joy comes when we apply the commandments of scripture. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy mind, and all thy soul. And love thy neighbor as thyself. That's the hardest one. But in that commandment lies the essence of faith. People of all faiths, some people of no faith, gay, straight, immigrant, Native American, differences express infinite creativity of God, who is able to see his reflection in countless ways in different people. Let's start treating each other with respect. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops.
So, of course, I don't really appreciate being told by the president I'm supposed to love my God. I don't have a God as an atheist. I do see that he's trying to be inclusive, because he talks about people of all faith, then he adds people of no faith, gay, straight, you know, that we're all like doing God's work or something.
Huh.
I appreciate the effort, but it isn't very logical to talk about God to people who do not believe in a God. And that's the real problem with the prayer breakfast, is they take an oath of office to uphold our Constitution, which is secular, which has no religious test for public office. And yet this prayer breakfast is like a de facto religious test. If you don't show up, there's something wrong with you, you're impious, it can be used against you. So very unfortunate to see it continuing, and we will continue to pressure to stop it.
That Love Your Neighbor verse reminds me of the poem that Yip Harburg wrote, the free-thinking composer of Over the Rainbow and many songs. It's a little short poem called Do Unto Others. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Hide that motto on the shelf. Let it lie there. Keep it idle. Especially if you're suicidal.
So, in other bizarre news, we are urging, FFRF is urging the Miami Beach City Commission to reject e-roof maintenance. And for those who do not know what an e-roof is, it's a string or wire that is draped all around telephone poles, all around city blocks, to act as a way for Orthodox Jews to get around the Sabbath rules and expand their ability to move around freely. It is a very completely religious thing that is only of meaning to Orthodox Jews and ultra-Orthodox Jews. And on Wednesday, February 1st, the City Commission voted, they were set to vote on a resolution to grant $72,000 to the Miami Beach E-Roof Council to maintain and repair these E-Roof lines. Now, they deferred some of it, but they are doing some other things, and we'll keep you posted on that.
FFRF is closely monitoring the alarming surge in anti-transgender bills being introduced in state legislatures around the nation. Many of the legislators authoring these bills are overtly invoking religious reasons for sponsoring the legislation.
And there's over 150 such bills introduced in 25 states.
On our news link, you can read some of the comments they have made. And FFRF, with the help of its memberships, we're calling on state legislators to reject these harmful, religiously based, and discriminatory measures.
And some of them are really ridiculous, like saying that you can't have a drag queen story hour on a Sunday, even if children are not present. They're out there. And if you're a member of our group, you'll be getting our action alerts on these. And I do want to say, very good piece of legislation just passed in Minnesota, the Pro Bill, which is going to codify protections for abortion rights, making Minnesota a firmly pro-choice state.
So we announced before on the show that we are complaining about the coach Deion Sanders, the University of Colorado, a famous coach. He's been mixing religion into his coaching. He He's been praying to God and to Jesus, and some people are complaining to us that that seems inappropriate. So we complained, and last Friday, the school contacted us and told us that they personally met with Coach Sanders to provide guidance, including the boundaries in which players may engage in religious expression, and that Coach Sanders was very receptive to this training and came away with a better understanding of the university's policies and the requirements of the establishment clause.
And in a school district, the Opelika Florida School District in Florida, they agreed no longer to distribute Gideon Bibles as part of their graduation packet to high school seniors. So that's another victory. We want to thank Chris Lyne, our attorney, for that.
And then in Georgia, there's a school, a Jonesboro High School, that's inviting a preacher in to the gymnasium to speak to students about Jesus and God. The preacher's name is a woman named Wovicki, and she's telling girls to remain celibate and giving all this misinformation about gay rights. Let's listen to a little bit. This is hard to hear because it's in a big empty gymnasium, but one of the students asks Wovicki, is homosexuality a sin? And listen to her response.
Okay, so, is it bad to be gay in the Bible?
You want to answer?
Being gay is a sin. Is a sin that people can see, right? But when, let's say, somebody might be judging for being gay, but what they doing that you can't see? They might be having sex outside of marriage. They might be being a girlfriend.
It's about
you. Yeah, and no sin is bigger than the other. If you go kill somebody right now, that ain't no different from being gay. And God can forgive any sin.
So if you go kill somebody right now, it's no different from being gay. And God can forgive you. So we're
complaining
about that.
So you can imagine why we are demanding she should not be in our schools.
So we're going to take a little break listening to Old Devil Moon by Burton Lane. After the break, attorney Sam Grover will tell us about our victory, finally, in our lawsuit challenging Texas Governor Greg Abbott's censorship of our secular nativity display. And then Nebraska Senator Megan Hunt. We will hear from her acceptance of an award at our convention last October.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio. Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have in person here with us today one of our attorneys, one of our FFRF litigation attorneys, Sam Grover. Welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back and to have some good news for once.
Yes, and some people might think listening to you that you're Ari Shapiro. On NPR. I keep saying your voice sounds like him.
Maybe over a microphone. I've never gotten that in person, though.
So you are here to tell us about FFRF's most recent court victory. Yay. It happened right after, the day after our last Free Thought Radio show was recorded. So tell us, what did we win?
Yeah. So we have our ongoing lawsuit against the Texas State Preservation Board and Governor Greg Abbott. And as a reminder, After Texas allowed a Christian nativity scene in the Texas Capitol Rotunda in 2014, we put up our Bill of Rights nativity scene to celebrate the ratification of the Bill of Rights in December.
And may I just describe that?
Sure.
I think it's Ben Franklin. We keep wondering.
Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson
and
the Statue of
and
Liberty.
Washington,
surrounding the Bill of Rights in the manger.
The manger scene, they're gazing adoringly
right
at the manger scene, and it's got a little baby Bill of Rights because it was signed into law, or no, I can't remember, ratified on December 15th, 1791. So it makes it a good seasonal display.
Correct.
And an appropriate display in a public building.
Yeah, a great way to remind Texans that not everyone's a Christian, and the Christian nativity scene has these counterpoints, right? Other things that we should revere at that time of year. So anyway, Governor Abbott took issue with the idea that atheists exist and ordered our display removed from the Capitol. So he censored our display based on its content. And we have been suing over this since 2016 because of this obvious First Amendment violation. Governor Abbott has fought tooth and nail every step of the way, arguing that we should lose and then arguing that the case should be thrown out. So we won the case a while ago. It went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. They said, yes, you've won. It went back to the district court. And that's when Texas started playing around with its rules for displays in the Capitol in order to try to get our case thrown out. So that at first they amended the rules to say, this is government speech. And we won at the district court and went back up on appeal. And even the appeals court was like, yeah, you can't just say something's government speech and have it be so. You have to actually
they're saying that the forum is government speech.
Yeah, yeah. And it obviously wasn't. Like the government had no control over any of the messages that were going up other than to give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Who owned the nativity scene?
That was put up, I think it was the Thomas More Society.
So it was a private outside group.
It was absolutely a private outside group, as are all of the displays that go up are private displays. Private parties generate the content of these displays. They go up for 5 days about, and then the private display is taken back by the private group. So it has none of the hallmarks of being government speech. Texas just wants to be able to discriminate between different displays under the guise of it being government speech. So anyway, no court in this case bought that argument. So after we had oral argument for the second time before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, then Texas said, well, all right, we're just going to do away with our rules for displays altogether. And so finally, the Fifth Circuit had to deal with whether that mooted the case, made it so we couldn't get the relief we got. And finally, this decision solidifies our victory over Governor Abbott. The Fifth Circuit said, okay, we're not going to let you have the injunctive relief that was issued, basically saying you get to put up your display in the future, which makes sense that we wouldn't get that since now they don't have any rules for putting up displays. There's
In other words, they sort of closed the forum for now.
They appear to have closed the forum. It has yet to be seen what's going to happen after this lawsuit's over, whether they start putting up displays again.
So it may not be over.
It may not be over. For now, it's absolutely over, the lawsuit anyway. So we don't get our injunctive relief, but we do still get our declaratory relief saying, yes, the state of Texas violates your right to free speech by discriminating against your display. So that's set in stone now. That's a victory.
It is a big victory.
Yes.
And congratulations to you because you were the primary litigator on this case.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
And you even filed the original, you even filed for the original permit.
Yes, that's right. I filed for the permit. I've been litigating the case throughout. I had to sit for a deposition for it. And it's nice that finally we're reaping the rewards of that.
And reaping the rewards will include attorney's fees and costs, and that's to come.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So the court told Governor Abbott that he broke the law, right?
There exactly.
Well, thank you, Sam. It's been fun talking with you again.
Of course, yeah. Yes, I hope I have more good news in the near future.
Yeah, and fun besting Governor Abbott.
Every week, let's have a good news. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and hear Nebraska Senator Megan Hunt working to keep state and church separate.
And an open atheist.
This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us?
I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Nebraska State Senator Megan Hunt, who publicly identifies as an atheist, received the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Champion of the First Amendment Award at our 2022 annual convention in San Antonio last fall. Her remarks during debate against an abortion ban trigger bill that she called a church bill sponsored by Christian religious extremists were credited with helping to kill that bill in early April 2022.
Yes, and so abortion remains legal. Megan Hunt has worked with other senators to ban the harmful practice of conversion therapy, to improve affordable housing, and most recently she's been opposing a bill to make it a crime to take children to drag queen reading hours for children. Last month, she filed a very clever amendment that basically rewrites the anti-drag bill to protect children from actual threats, in this case, religious indoctrination camps. That means, you know, like Bible,
yeah.
Bible vacations camps. Her amendment reads, "No individual under 19 years of age shall be present at a religious indoctrination camp. Any person 19 years of age or older who knowingly brings an individual under 19 of years of age to a religious indoctrination camp shall be guilty of a Class 1 misdemeanor." So echoing the language of the drag queen story hour.
And that misdemeanor comes with a $10,000 fine. She knew that her amendment would not pass. But the media covered her complaint, and they were bringing this issue to the national news. So let's back up to last October, and let's listen to Megan Hunt's remarks as she accepted FFRF's Champion of the First Amendment Award.
It's incredible to receive this honor. It is really difficult to follow people like Dr. Butler, who I admire so much, Amy Hagstrom-Miller, who's coming up next. I met her in Washington, D.C. She probably doesn't remember at this, like, event when stuff was going on at the Supreme Court, and I thought she was just, like, the coolest person ever. And I'm in this room with all these fantastic people and figures in the movement, and I just feel like this regular person, and I don't know how I got into this mess. And I don't say that to put myself down or anything, just to say, like, isn't it incredible in life how one choice leads to another, and then you're just like, oh my God, I'm like responsible for things, and I never wanted this to happen, and I'm in too deep. But that's like pretty much been my life, I feel like. My background is really in entrepreneurship and activism. I'm a single mom. I have a 12-year-old son who's in seventh grade, and I've just been a gal in the neighborhood for about the past 18 years. I've been a business owner in my district for about 20 years, and I ran a clothing boutique for about 12 years, and now I run a stationery store. So who I am at my core, I feel like, is a mom in the neighborhood who runs a shop. But circumstances have come into my life so many times that caused me to kind of take a fork in the road or make a different decision, and it just shows to me how everybody, you don't have to come from privilege, you don't have to have money, you don't have to have like the biggest, strongest network ever. You just have to try to make the next right decision as much as possible. And you find yourself in these situations where you really have an opportunity to make a difference for people. And that has been truly the honor of my life. And, you know, whether I'm in the legislature or doing something else or not elected at all, I know that that's going to be how I continue to live out the rest of my life, because that's what gives me so much purpose. So my background is I'm as a business owner and a parent and everything. But the way I got into politics, and I never saw myself getting into politics. It was never like a goal of mine. I studied German in college. Like, I was not trying to square myself up to be in power or some big leader or anything. And in 2005, Omaha Public Schools, which is our public school district where I live, they were starting to consider updates to their comprehensive sex education curriculum. At the time, our human growth and development, or sex ed curriculum, hadn't been updated since 1971. So in some cases, you had kids getting the same sex ed that their grandparents had gotten. And of course, since 1971, we've had the AIDS epidemic. We've had an increasingly out and increasingly depressed and suicidal LGBTQ plus population. We have the internet and everything that comes along with that. So even though sex is basically the same, like, there's a lot more going on in society, and we know that kids aren't getting accurate information about their own biology and their bodies and the kinds of information that they need to make responsible decisions for their futures. In my county, in Nebraska at the time, we also had the highest rates of STDs and STIs in the entire country. And I was part of a group of people who knew that to make a difference in that number for public health, for the health of our kids, comprehensive sex education could go a long way for that. It was as contentious as some of you probably can guess. There were public hearings, there was outcry, there were rallies on both sides, for and against. At one public school board meeting, there was physical fighting, people shouting slurs at LGBTQ kids, adults, you know, like harassing children this way. And I was in this room, this overflow room, because the meeting was so big, and I'm looking around just thinking, all we're talking about is teaching kids medically accurate, age-appropriate, research-based, biological information about their bodies and their health. And the violence and the anger that this inspires in my neighbors, in the people around us, in our community, shows how little respect we have for ourselves, for each other, for public health, and for the researchers and scientists and people who do all the work to bring this information to us so we can make the best decisions. And that really concerned me. So, long story short, we did it. We ended up updating the curriculum. The school board voted to add comprehensive sex education to the curriculum. It was very difficult. It was super arduous. Can't believe we did it. And I found that people for the first time were seeing me not just as a business leader, but maybe as a political leader, because I had organized lots of letters to the editor. I had organized a whole bunch of rallies. I had done a lot of work with parents and teachers, myth busting and trying to debunk things the other side was saying, and I was part of a group that really led the charge on this. And so I started asking around and saying, you know, if I ran for the legislature, would you support me? And everywhere I turned, people were like, yes, you should run. You should do it. You should do it. And all of us have, like, friends or cousins or neighbors where we think of them when we're like, they should run for office. They would be really good in city council, or they would be really good in the House of Representatives. They would be really good on the school board. But they don't run because they don't want to get involved in all this BS that we have to deal with. Keep pushing those people. And I'm really glad that I was asking around and trying to get people's support, because when I announced that I was running, everybody in my neighborhood and my community was right there with me. And I really needed their support, because once I was elected in 2018, I won by a landslide and became the first queer person elected to the legislature and the first woman elected from my district. Not to Thank you. I'm proud of that, but you know, I also kind of say it's a dubious honor, because it's not great that it took until 2018 to elect an LGBTQ person. And again, not to put myself down, but I'm kind of like the Diet Coke of gay culture. Like, there's nothing challenging going on here. Like, we have a long way to go for representation. And I feel a responsibility not just to like speak for those people, but to hold the door open behind me and make sure that people from all kinds of life experiences are able to serve in public office, because we know that government works better when it actually reflects the identities of the people it serves. And that's some old rich white men. There's some of you out there. You should have some representation, but there's too much, right? And, you know, in Nebraska, we've never had a Jewish state senator. We've never had a Muslim state senator. We don't have a lot of representation from people of different nationalities or different abilities. And all of these things denigrate government to me. I'm happy to be a non-believer, and, you know, I can represent that group as well as I can as an individual, but I don't represent the scope of experiences of the people of Nebraska or the people around the country who our work affects. So that's a big mission that I've had. I want to ask, I know that I'm speaking to like an extremely friendly room, and a lot of you have been very active in this movement for decades. How many of you know Senator Ernie Chambers? Yeah. Okay, so for those of you who don't, I'm glad that he has some fans here. Senator Ernie Chambers is the longest serving state senator in Nebraska's history. He served for 46 years. They implemented term limits because of him. And he was often also the only black senator in the legislature. Many, many years, he was the only person of color and the only black man that was elected in the legislature. He, during his time in the legislature, has been an extremely important mentor and friend to me. And so receiving this award, Champion of the First Amendment, is even more meaningful to me because he received this award in like 2004? Somebody will know. But he received this award in the past, and I know that this organization means a lot to him. And when I got into the legislature, we sat next to each other by chance, and we really, really hit it off. And it wasn't because we're both non-believers. It wasn't just that. I think that we both understand what it feels like when you think the government doesn't notice you or care about you or work for you. And it's so important, and I tell this to young people all the time, that young people especially, as they're starting to get involved in civic engagement and voting and things like that, that they understand that the government is literally for you. It's not above you. It's not better than you. It's not too difficult for you to understand. It's not for people smarter than you. It's made up of people just like you, and it exists for you. And so I really try to encourage people to get involved, whether that's deciding to run for office or being engaged with the nonprofit community where you live. All of these things are so important for our civic health. And everything that Dr. Butler said before me and many other speakers have said here, and all of you already know because we're preaching to the choir, is that civic health is really bad right now. And the more we can react positively to that and get people involved in a positive way, maybe we can keep it on life support. You know, it's a difficult time for sure. And it's a difficult time to be elected.
That is Nebraska State Senator Megan Hunt, our champion of the First Amendment, an out atheist in state legislature. And when we come back, we'll hear the conclusion of her remarks.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots
Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are listening to Nebraska State Senator Megan Hunt, who happens to be an out atheist, who helped kill an anti-abortion trigger bill last year in her state, and we gave her a Champion of the First Amendment Award, and this is the conclusion of her remarks at our national convention last fall.
I'll tell one story about Senator Chambers. So Senator Chambers was really well known for his filibusters. He could talk for hours and hours and hours. The whole floor would be empty. Like, all the senators would be like, well, Ernie's talking, so I'm going to go back to my office and get some things done because I know it's going to be hours before we get to anything. And that's a skill. That's a skill that I really have tried to learn from him and that he has taught me, how to use the rules, how to use procedures, motions, amendments to hold things up. Because even at the end of the day, in a conservative state like Nebraska or like Texas, when we don't have the votes to stop something terrible or we don't have the numbers that we need to get something done that needs to be done, we do have time. And the gift that he gave me is just understanding how to use these procedures so that we can take up as much time as possible. And we were debating an abortion restriction bill in like 2019, and he traditionally would be leading a filibuster on something like that. I mean, he's the old timer, he's experienced, he's teaching the rest of us because now in the era of term limits, we have a lot less of an idea of what's going on. And so his mentorship was very important. And as we're debating this abortion restriction bill, he's in his office downstairs the entire time. And I'm filing these motions. I'm keeping my light on so I can keep talking. It's been hours. I'm filing amendments, like going off on all these little tangents, doing my best. I love this work. But the whole time, he never came upstairs to help. And I was like a little perturbed by this. I'm like, you know, I got to do all this myself now. What's going on? And at the end of the bill, when we had the vote, it was like 16 hours or something of talking. He came upstairs for the vote, and we lost, of course, but we didn't make it easy. And that's the other thing that I've learned, is that another tool that you have in the toolbox, even if you're not going to win the day, even if you're not going to win the war or the battle that day, you cannot make it easy for them. You have to make them go home at the end of the night sad and tired and exhausted, in a bad mood, regretting the day they brought that bill because it was no fun to pass it. And that's what I feel like I've been able to do with every abortion restriction that has come through Nebraska. Even though we can't always hold them off, they regret it because we made it so painful for them. And that's what gives me pleasure. And I do think that's a deterrent. I think that makes people think twice about introducing some little thing. They go, Megan's going to make it too tough, so let's not. But that day that we had that vote and Ernie came upstairs, he came over to talk to me, and I said, oh, you know, I was sad because we lost the vote, so we're never going to have the numbers for this kind of thing. And he said, he put his hands on my shoulder like this, and he goes, did you do everything you could? And I said, yes, I did everything I could. And he says, well, then how can anyone ask any more of you? And I think about that all the time when it feels like a loss is inevitable, especially as a progressive in a conservative state. If you've done your best, how can anybody ask any more of you? And I asked him, I said, where were you? Like, were you just in your office the whole time? Why didn't you come up? And he goes, because I needed to know that when I'm not here anymore, that you can do that. Yeah. I like still tear up, like thinking about that moment. But The Nebraska legislature is a very special place. It's the only nonpartisan legislature in the country. It's the only one-house legislature in the country, so we don't have a House and a Senate. And it's also the smallest legislature in the country with just 49 members. So we don't have any majority-minority leaders. We don't have any caucuses. All of our leadership is elected by the whole body with a secret ballot. So there's no overt party pressure to vote for the right person or anything. And for that reason, even though Democrats are in the minority, we actually have an outsized majority of committee chairmen, because when the ballot is secret and you're able to actually vote for the person who's best for the job, progressives tend to take those positions. So it's a very special place. But my view is just, in the pie chart of my life, the small time that I get to be in the legislature, be a state senator, wear my little pin, have people call me senator in the hallway, that's such a small slice of my life. And it's really a gift to have this time to talk for 16 hours a day, to frustrate conservatives as much as possible, to get the death threats, to get the rape threats, to get doxxed, to get my child threatened at school, to get all the things that come with, as Dr. Butler said, the danger that sometimes we need to put ourselves in to make a meaningful difference, and ask yourself, what more are you willing to do to make the change you need to see in the world? I'm very mindful that I don't want to waste that gift, that I won't have this platform forever. These awards are really nice, and it's very nice to meet all of you and receive this recognition, and I just want to thank you.
And that was Nebraska Senator Megan Hunt, an open atheist, accepting FFRF's Champion of the First Amendment Award at our convention last October in San Antonio. So that's our show for today. Free Thought Radio is recorded in the Stephen Uhl, Friendly Atheist Studio. We want to say hello to listeners in Philadelphia, to WOOMLP, that's 92.9. In Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, to WZMLLP, that's also 92.9. In Madison, Wisconsin, to WIDEFM and WMUULP. In Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR Community Radio. Over in Texas, there's two stations. KEOS is in College Station, and KZSM is in San Marcos, Texas. In Missouri, right in the middle of the state, in the city of Columbia, is the station KOPN. Over on the West Coast, in Eugene, Oregon, KEPW 97.3 FM. And in Bellows Falls, Vermont, right on the border there with New Hampshire, so it's heard in both states, WOOL. They call it Black Sheep Radio, WOOL. And in Kingston, Rhode Island, the university station there is WRIU 90.3. And in Ithaca, New York, and Watkins Glen, New York, WRFI. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, please give a thumbs up on your podcast provider, and please tell others to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
You can also listen to the show right on our website at ffrf.org/radio and find out more about the new podcast We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for state separation and representing FFRF among them. And they have a new podcast about the latest anti-gay case before the Supreme Court. Ask for more information at ffrf.org to join us, or click the link to ask for more info, and we'll send you a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and a brochure about our 45-plus years of activism. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.